This meeting is being recorded, and I'm going to share the screen. So, yeah, hello everyone again, and welcome in our weekly Aries JavaScript call. I wasn't here last time, but I saw the recording, and I'm sorry that I didn't tell anyone about this, that I won't be there. That's kind of my fault, and I should communicate better in this area. So I'm sorry, Timo, that you needed to handle it, but I think you did it very well.
No problem. I think I just misunderstood.
Yeah.
It saved me 30 minutes, so it's all good.
Okay. So I'm gonna start with mention of antitrust policy as always, and I think we can go ahead with the agenda for today. So then before we start with that, does anyone have anything want to add to the agenda, and anything else instead of those three topics? Okay.
Bring up the mediation again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, mediation issues maybe.
Yeah, mainly the startup one, because I thought it was DrivePR, but that's closed now, and it's pretty a blocker in working with it at the moment.
Good point. Okay. So maybe we can start with the mediation issues. If you want.
I don't know I if think people it's like... from Indicio are here, because that's want to get an update on the status, and if not, if we can help with it or something.
Okay.
Because we now have to every time we start the agent, we have to provide a new invitation, and if you restart the agent, it doesn't include the mediator anymore. So you can only create connections when you start the agent, and after that you need to create a new you need to use a new mediator invitation. So you can't actually restart the agent ever.
What if you start the agent second time without mediation invitation? Would it work?
It will find the mediation record and it will start pulling from the mediation. But if you create new connections, it will share the DITCOM transport queue instead of the mediator endpoint. So they won't be able to reach you. So if you create the connection on startup and then restart the agent, you can receive credentials from the agent that you connected with, because you shared the correct mediator endpoint. But after restart, if you create a connection, you will share the incorrect endpoint.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I see. Because I had that issue, and I saw it's there. I solved that issue you just mentioned, but because I'm using the same connection, I'm not creating the new one. So that works for me. I have just one connection, and that's okay. So in that case, I just start the agent or initialize agent second time without mediation invitation. That's working. So
yeah, that's also what we're doing now.
So I don't see Adam is not here, James neither, so Patrick, maybe if you have some update.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for Adam, but I think I overheard him. He said that he is working on merging the fix, and then he's going to do a PR once that is merged in his branch that he's working on.
Okay, because I saw there was a draft, but it's been closed. So and I thought that's the good way how to fix that issue. So I don't know why it's closed now or what was the reason to close it.
I think he was doing another PR at the same time, and so he was just merging the two issues into one PR.
Okay. I see. It would be good to create maybe at least another draft, if not final issue. I'm kind of curious about that. I was playing around with the framework in past days, and maybe have also some ideas, or not ideas, but I see some pain points, and I need to think through some ideas of improvements. So I'm also like curious about that. Maybe he will solve some of them, and that would be great. Okay, so maybe another related. I will reorder that to have the right order. I would jump to multiple transports because I also somehow communicated with Adam about that, but I'm also not sure how was the progress right now, and if he's working on that, or if I can help somehow, I'm open to do so. So,
That was the other issue. He was merging with the mediation issues.
Okay, so he's working on them together?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So yeah, he's working on that. So I'm not looking into that anymore. So I'm just like waiting for that. And but yeah, that's good to know. I wasn't sure if he's working on like the multiple transport or the issues. So I was thinking that I could eventually help with one of them, but if he's working on both, that's okay. And we don't have to bother or like try to change his code under his hands. Yeah, great, Patrick. Thanks for update. And maybe other thing would be this one, this pickup protocol, because I'm kind of playing with some mediation service right now, and there are actually some other areas I would like to have in the framework, and I can eventually look at them, but one of them is definitely pickup protocol with like message update, and I'm curious, Timo, is it something you would like to work on, or is it maybe already in progress, or how do you think, like what's your perspective about this task? How much is it how much priority is it for you, or do you have any ideas?
Not really high, I think. Because we have pickup V1, and current thing where we're working towards to is using ECPI as a mediator. So I think our first priority would be to support implicit message pickup. I think we already do that sort of. Working that in getting it working with ECPI and the multiple transports, and just having the current mediation implementation working without problems.
Yeah. Okay, so my concern is about persistence of messages. Is it somehow part of the implicit message pickup also. Maybe it's kind of related, or maybe it's not. I'm not sure what's exactly like. How is it related together? Because, you know, for us to use Aries framework, we would need mediation service which is capable to store messages, I guess. Like persistent the messages if we restart the server, for example. Is that also part of the implicit message pickup, or it's just part of the version 2.0?
Not really. I think persistence is ECCAPy currently stores in memory, which I think there was a discussion at the ECCAPUC working group yesterday on how to make that really persistent. I think using something like Redis. I wasn't at that, so I'd still need to watch the recording. But I think we eventually want to do the same in AFJ, because we currently have the in-memory message repository, which is not optimal, of course. But I think it's a separate thing from Pickup Protocol V2. Okay. I think the main thing that V2 offers is like the acceptance, or like sending a verification that you received it, so you won't lose messages in transport.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. And you know, and I see those kind of similar things, because I wouldn't like to remove something without knowing that the, you know, client received that. So, but yeah, I understand. Yeah, actually, we can implement the persistent storage with current behavior. That's right. And then we would be just like naively removing messages when we dispatch them. That's maybe kind of good. Yeah, that's probably good. Good solution, good enough solution, maybe. Okay, so yeah, I see.
But I think if like Pickup Protocol V2 is ready to be merged, we can definitely look at how easy it will be to implement in AFJ and later on ECCAPy.
Yeah, I see. Because, you know, Aries, right now I'm like in a way that I'm looking at progress of migration from Aries VCX to Aries Framework JavaScript. And we are definitely, we are missing some features in Aries Framework JavaScript, but we have also other features which are missing in the VCX. But what's kind of good with VCX that we have this pickup protocol, although it's proprietary, it's still there. And I was thinking maybe this is probably one thing which we would need before we can like migrate. I wanted to bring it up and discuss this. I could eventually look at the implementation into the framework, or maybe we can go with ECCAPy. ECCAPy doesn't store the message, doesn't persist the messages.
And we would still need the protocol in ECCAPy then. But I think we should support multiple ways to do it in AFJ. And we recently added a discover feature protocol, which would mean we can detect which way to use for picking up messages instead of needing to configure it. So because I don't think if we support another one, we should remove the other way to do it.
Yeah, I think so. So. Do you think it would be possible to implement the pickup 2.0 without like breaking current state of the communication with ECCAPy? I think that's something you definitely want to preserve there. So, but I think it should be possible, right?
I think it's just a different, like currently we also support pickup. I think there is something in place for implicit pickup, and we specify it on startup, like which is the strategy, how you want to pick up, but we support both. And we can just add a third one, which would be pickup protocol V2, and yeah, go support all of them.
Okay. Great. So yeah, that's great. Yeah, and then I will look at it. I will think what other parts we are missing there. Maybe if there is something more important than this for us, then we can discuss it, like in issues or in Rocket Chat or next week. But I could eventually start to work on something like that. So one more thing to regarding this. You mentioned some discussions in some call yesterday. Was it like Eric's call, and is there any recording out there?
Yeah, the Ekapu call, I think.
Akapai call.
Yeah, Akapai call. Ah, yeah, they called the Ekapu call. Yeah, but it was about I wasn't there, but Stefan posted that they were talking about persistent queues, a discussion about what is needed for handling queues for standard Ekapai and Ekapai as a mediator service use case.
Great. Maybe could you put a link to that in agenda?
Yeah. Oh, in agenda. Yeah, I'll.
Yeah, or somewhere. Oh, I
post it in chat, but I'll set it
in chat. There. Yeah, it's in chat. Okay. Great. Thanks. Yeah. Great. Okay. So the last thing. I added here is this point about the like in the SDK and eventual migration from the in the SDK to something different, because I'm just checking if Patrick, my colleague Patrick, is in here. He's not in here. It's unfortunate, but he brought up this discussion in our team that they would like to update VCX to Evernym's VDR tools. I'm not sure if you know about that, but Evernym announced updates of their tools, new versions of their products. I can put the links into this agenda also. Their idea is that they already did it. So they forked in the SDK and created this VDR tools, which is forked of the in the SDK. And their idea is to update in the SDK according their needs, keep this VDR tools like separate outside of the India SDK. And
go ahead. I thought you were.
Yeah, the main issue which I'm interested in, and also we like Patrick is also interested in this, and that's kind of the big reason why we are discussing it, is the async communication with the wallet. Because I don't know details, but I know about there. I know that there are some problems with synchronous communication, because every access to the wallet, I guess, is synchronous. Although even it's called like, you know, from Node.js, even if you are calling like async or await, it's still synchronous and under the hood. And that's the problem, which is gonna be solved by Eris Askar for the storage, but Evernym added this feature, or they are working on that. I'm not sure if it's there or already, but they are working in the VDR tools repository on this feature. So I know that we discussed like a few months ago that our plan is to move into this like to move or use those three libraries. So yes, so these three libraries, and what's different with VDR tools, I guess, is that they want to preserve everything under the one library, but this is like an idea of separating the things. And I'm curious about your opinions about this. What do you think?
I haven't looked at it in a lot of detail, but I think from the surface, I'm not a very big fan, because it does all the things in a single library, and they're explicitly mentioning it's gonna be called Evernim VDR Tools and not something like Hyperledger VDR Tools. Mm. So it will be an Evernim open source project, which means, what they want is probably what they're gonna do with the library, I think it will get very complex if you keep adding more and more to this single. I think Indy was very a lot of things, and I think that made it maybe a bit hard to maintain. But I don't know. I haven't looked at it, so maybe it will be a good direction to go. I think it also depends on how many people are going to use it, and if I've heard from multiple parties that are interested to use more like the the shared components libraries, which will be a benefit for all. And I think another downside of the Indy VDR, and I don't know how much, is like if you want to make it as easy as possible, like if you want to run eventually run AFJ in the browser, you want to not you can't use Indy, because Indy can't run in the browser, partly due to because you use ZMQ, which you can't run in the browser, and if you have this one library that does everything, then it will be very hard to like replace some specific tools for specific platforms.
Okay. So I will start good points. I will start from the end and with the question. So regarding the browser and using in the SDK, you said that it's not possible to use it because of ZeroMQ is not working in the browser. That's only restriction, or are there more restrictions?
I think besides that, it's not built for the browser. But from what I know, that's always been a blocker, because ZMQ needs direct access to TCP connections, which you can't have in the browser, which means you can't use it in a browser.
Okay. Would it be possible to use WebAssembly for this? Because I think in general, most of the libraries would be possible to compile to WebAssembly, and
but that's the blocker for it.
But
even WebAssembly in the browser has some sort of sandboxed environment where you can't do everything you want, and direct TCP connections is one of them that's not possible, as far as I know.
Okay. I understand your points, and basically I agree with all of them. I would like to, like, I don't have, actually I don't have preference, you know, but I'm aware of that synchronicity problem. That's something I would like to have solved, and I am, I like, I don't have preference, so much preference which way to go, but I just want to solve it. So that's one thing. On the other hand, that's a really great point that it's Evernim's tool and it's Evernim's project. That's a good point. I haven't thought about that in this way. And also that you have everything together. That's also what I don't like about this project. And I think it should be separate. But what's my concern, and I expressed it before and many times, is that it's kind of nice to have one API, one library, and build the bridge to just one library. So that's probably the only reason I would consider having just in the SDK or something like that, be it in the SDK itself or VDR tools.
I think to add to it is, I think it makes more sense for something like ARI's VCX to depend on a thing like this, because I think a difference in approach is they expose wrappers to all languages, and they like, I think we implement a lot in JavaScript itself. Like all our logic is implemented in JavaScript, and I think that makes it more open to extension. And we still need to do some things in the native code. But I think having specific, more smaller things for that makes it easier for other people to extend and to be able to use AFJ for their use cases, instead of having the bulk of the logic and also the things that connect these different tools, like storage and ledger and signature types and that kind of stuff. If you have that all on that lower layer, that means whenever you want to extend AFJ, you probably will end up fairly soon on the Rust layer again. And I think one of the nice things is that you not always have to do this with AFJ.
So yeah, you think it's it would be a problem having like one library with everything.
And it depends, I think, how composable it is also.
Yeah. Because, you know, my idea, if and, you know, maybe having separate libraries and bridges, separate bridges, it's not so big problem as I am. I think so. So maybe it will be way simpler. Maybe if we are able to communicate from the JavaScript to Rust library in React Native, that's something which could help a lot. Otherwise I don't see any problem with that. I would prefer to have like to use separate libraries for separate things. And back to my idea, I was thinking about having some rep, you know, some facade layer, which would work like similarly, like right now in the SDK, but under the hood, we wouldn't call in the SDK, like we wouldn't call libindie, we would call indie VDL lib and indie credex lib in particular places, but we would have like one class with all methods as we have right now. That would solve the problem with many bridges from React Native to the native wrappers to native libraries. But I'm also aware of benefits with having those three libraries separate. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I think yeah. I think we discussed it kind of all. And yeah, okay.
Yeah, but I'm like, if it's just, I've looked at the repo once, but there's not a lot yet there, and I think a lot of it is still left from the in the SDK, so it's a bit hard to see. But if you like, I'm open to exploring the ID, just not sure yet how we could use it or what it will exactly offer and how it will offer that and how easy it will be for us to adopt.
Okay. Yeah, that, you know, and I just wanted to share this with you. I just wanted to hear your ideas and your feedback about that. I don't have any preference right now. That's all for what I wanted from this discussion today. So yeah, that's basically it. Okay. Next point, Android 12. What is it about?
Sure. Yeah, it just came, it has been an issue for a while that in Android 11, the external storage that is used in Android, Indy uses that by default and it's not configurable, was moved to a legacy thing and you couldn't just request it. But I think it now James also mentioned that in Android 12, it will be completely removed. Which means, we can't request permission, which means, as I understand it right now, in the SDK can't be used on Android 12 without making updates. So I was curious to hear if other people are running into this or worried about this issue and how they plan to resolve it. I think a lot of people should run into this issue because I think every wallet on Android will have that, or I don't know exactly how that works with Android. Like, is it only if you target like Android 12 or so I was just a bit curious if what other people think about this issue and the scope of it.
I will look at it, what's in our code base with and in my experiments how I set up Android, because I think I spot this setup somewhere in the past and probably we have it also. I'm not sure if I use this in my new experiments.
No, but it's hard-coded into the Rust code of in the SDK.
Ah, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but you are saying that you wouldn't be able to use it on Android 11 without these settings, if I understand it correctly?
Yeah, I think because that was the workaround for Android 11, but I'm not sure how it works.
Because I am pretty sure that I haven't used this one. Maybe I did. I'm not sure. I need to look at it. But yeah, of course, we are. I think I did. Concerned about that.
I think I did have to use that back in the day.
Okay. Yeah.
But the legacy one.
Yeah. Yeah, the legacy one. Because that's what you put into the manifest, right? Yeah.
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 I can do a double check, but I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Yeah. So, that's great. You mentioned it. So thanks for that. I'm gonna look at it.
But maybe a workaround is because if I now look at maybe that's it. If you go to the in the SDK React Native repo. Maybe that will be the fix, and that's why we haven't run into it. If you go all the way down to the bottom of the README, there's we just set the external storage env, which is if you scroll totally to the bottom, like this is what we do now. But there's a fix at the bottom which is pod, and I was curious if we could just put another pod and set this as the external storage because in the SDK. Uses the environment variable for external storage, but if we make it a different pod than the external storage, then we don't need the permission to access external storage. But I'm not sure if that would work.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. So yeah, this is the place where I spot that. So yeah, we are using that in this way. But I didn't know it's directly used in the library. So maybe that could work.
What are they changing exactly? Like, are they completely blocking out all external storage? That would be weird.
Yeah, that would be weird. I don't know.
No, I think they're changing storage and permissions, and you can just, because I think if you request access to external storage, you just have access to, like, if you put an SD card, you have access to it, which in an attempt to like improve privacy and more restrictive permissions, you can just request external storage permissions anymore. I think that's the thing.
Then it would be kind of weird that an external path would still work, right? It just means you don't have to ask anymore.
No, but it's the external storage is an environment variable, which we currently set to the external storage directory that's used by in the SDK. But we could also just point it to a pod, I think, that's internal to the app. Like every app has a custom
as
a directory that they can store files that is not accessible to for other apps, and only you can do it. But I was just wondering if that would work. I haven't tested it or given it a lot of thought, but
I guess if it's a sandbox path, then I couldn't see why that won't work. Nice.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that's all for today. So anyone has anything?
I see Adam is on the call now. So maybe, Adam, if you could give an update on your mediation work and how it's going with the multiple transports and like the startup issue. I would be interested to hear that.
Yes, of course. I think Patrick already talked. So if I say anything contradictory, Patrick will correct me and we'll go with what he said. So I had two PRs open. One I started was a second sort for getting services for a connection to use to send a message over a transport. What was there was a for loop, and we would just attempt to send a message over every transport until we had a success. I updated that to, as I was saying, sorry, I step all over, a secondary sort. So the list of services we're going to send a message to is sorted by the priority that their DID doc specifies in their service, and then secondarily by the inbound supported protocol, the preferred method we'd like to send messages on. After that, I also updated outbound transport to be a list of outbound transports where you can add like HTTP and web socket, which allows you to do things like accept a connection invitation that's HTTP. And then as soon as you get far enough, you can do message encrypting. Like as soon as you get their DID doc, you can switch over to web sockets. That PR evolved beyond my original scope. So I actually ended up merging it with the second PR I was working on, which was to correct the multiple restarts with the same mediation invitation config. Sorry, before I move on to the next idea, questions, feedback for multiple transport?
No, I haven't looked at the PR, but I'm interested to have this.
Yeah, I have. I'm not sure how did you update it from the last time I looked at it, but I saw that you are trying to find services according to supported schemas, right? Supported transports, right?
Right, right. And in the transports interface, it's supported schemas. Yes, sorry.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking if we shouldn't rather try to, you know, get all services and then try to send, try to iterate over transports and try to send the message. And if we fail, if it fails from some reason, then we would handle it in that place. So I'm not sure if it makes sense to try match the services against supported transports first. Because you know, if you don't, but maybe you are handling it in other way in other place. But if I, you know, try to match supported transport, like find transport, which I have in the framework for particular service, then I'm not sure how would you handle or where would you handle if you don't find the transport, supported transport, you know. Then we would need to handle that because you can still, even if you don't have transport for that, you can still save the message into the queue, or you can, you know, throw the exception or something like that. So yeah, that's my feedback about that.
So for the queue, I tried to keep the same mechanism that's occurring before I added the features. For the problem you're talking about, there's a list of outbound transports, and I wrote a method that will go through each transport and build a list of supported schemas or protocols. Mm-hmm. And then I remember I had to do something tricky to make sure I didn't have repeats, like a set. It's a pretty... functional method. You'll see it.
Okay.
You'll know when you see it. So I build a list of supported transports from the schemas of the registered transports. And then I sort by the secondary sort is by that, not by the inbound did doc, as I just said. I'm contradicting myself. Patrick should have saved me. So I think I did it similar to how you're describing. I tried not to deviate from how everything was being handled. So yeah, you'll have to review and let me know.
Okay. Okay, yeah, I will look at it.
Did that answer your questions?
Yeah, I think so. But I need to look at it again, so that would be better.
Yeah, of course. And if you want to look at, do we have time?
Yeah, we have 5 minutes.
Okay, so if you look at the code, at the current state it is, and go to the transport service.
In this PR?
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe just for clarification, what's the PR? What's the should we look on both PRs or should we look on just this one?
I put all the changes that we're manually testing and using into this single PR.
So it's this one, this 419.
Yeah.
Okay. It contains also this changes, right? These changes, the changes from the previous PR,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so transport service. Yes, here we go. Okay.
Oh, hold on. Right there. Oh, message. It's the message sender. Sorry, I lied.
Yeah.
Jump to
there it is.
Yes. So in the message sender, I updated the outbound transport to be a list of transports. As we add to, it's a line 25. As we add to the transports, Patrick actually helped me with this idea. We keep it in a sorted order. So by a priority of there's a priority you can pass in when you register, which happens to be, I believe, the index. This interface could be prettier if you have ideas. And then it's by the order that you want to use the transport. So if you want to use webhooks web sockets over HTTP, you'd make sure that web sockets is registered before HTTP transports.
Okay.
And so I build a list. I believe it's in supported transports, line 48. I build a list of all the supported schemas based off of that transport. And that's how I do the secondary sorting of services for outbound messages.
Okay. I think, but I'm not sure, maybe it's there, but I think to me, it seems like we should, the priority where or how to send the outbound message should be derived by this document first. I think that should be the first point. And then the second is our priority in the framework. But I think it should be like, you know, higher priority is the service. So what's in the service? And if we have like list of services, and the first priority is like WebSockets, but our framework has first priority HTTP, we should use WebSockets. We should prefer WebSockets.
Right. And that's the behavior I tried to create. And so in the transport service, it does the sorting by the service and then takes this supported transports as a secondary sorting but we keep priority of theirs, I believe. I think that's the significant parts of the priority sort. I think if you prioritize web sockets over HTTP and they support it, I think we pick our preference over theirs. I don't know, but we can hammer that out just so you have the thinking I was using.
Yeah.
So this gives the supported multiple transports, which in our scenario was you scan a mediation connection invite. A connection invitation that is from a mediator. And then during the process of establishing a connection, you want to switch over to WebSockets. And then after you have a connection established, you want to do all your communication with that connection over WebSockets to request mediation, and then to receive messages by trusping, I believe is the scenario we went through. I think those are the main ideas around the transport updates I did. If there's no questions, I can jump over to the other.
I have one question. What is the with the use case you just described in general, what's the reason for setting priority yourself instead of letting the agent and the DITOC decide it? Because I think it's very record or connection specific. So having an agent-wide priority on transports, even when the one connection you would maybe want to use HTTP and the other one you would have a preference for WebSockets. I think if you want to pick up messages from a mediator, you would want to use WebSockets. But I like for everything else, I would probably want to use HTTP. So setting it on an agent-wide level, what's the specific use case for it?
So ideally, instead of building this supported transports, we would use our DID doc in a connection, and our DID doc would have our services that we support in with the priority. I was trying to do least amount of code change, and so I implemented it to do the supported transports before. Like, I think this is a stepping stone to using our service doc in the DID doc. So you were asking what is the scenario where sorry, I got lost. Say the last question again.
The scenario to have an agent-wide priority on transports instead of letting the agent decide which transport to use. Or for example, with mediation, I would use I would want to use WebSockets, but that is a specific use case that would override the agent or the agent-wide priority.
Right. So we wanted to be able to support not just a single transport. As before, you could do either HTTP or WebSockets or and not both. And we ran into the scenario where we needed to use HTTP because most edge agents that we run into the wild, that's the preferred transport, and that's how it's done. But as we are developing our mediator, we discovered that there's just too many benefits to using WebSockets that we couldn't ignore. So to move towards being able to support two transports, I came up with the idea of having a priority of, okay, when I send messages out, if this agent we're communicating supports my preferred transport, I'm going to use that one like by default. I think you have pointed out a valid concern that we should be using the DID doc services associated with a connection. But yeah, I mean, in the scenario that you interact with an agent in the wild, either they receive a connection invitation or we do. And in that exchange, usually it's HTTP. And after we've exchanged DID docs, you can discover, oh, they support WebSockets, and you just start using those versus the other. But so I guess that's the scenario. Patrick, do you have anything to add? Can you make sense of my?
Unfortunately, not. I think you're explaining it well, though.
Okay. I don't know if I kind of am just repeating myself at this time. Ask the same question differently, Timo.
I think you explained it well. I think I get your reasoning. So,
Yeah, I'm still not sure about that. If it's like, you know, I understand that you definitely need more different transports for different connections, but I'm not sure if I can imagine the use case when I want to use my preferred outbound transport rather than like just take the transport definition from there, the document.
Well, I think there's definitely a valid use case. I'm just not sure if it's often useful to set it agent-wide, but if I use ECAPI as a mediator and also as a normal agent, then when I connect with people, I still have HTTP as the priority transport, but I also support WebSockets for people using me as a mediator. It's very valid to then connect through WebSockets as an agent being mediated, even though the most priority one is HTTP. I mean, if it doesn't want a WebSocket to be used, it wouldn't have it in the DDoC at first. So I think it's a very valid use case. I'm just not sure if where we're taking the configuration form or on what level we configure it is the best approach, but I think it's a good start at least.
Right. I'm actually late for a meeting, so I have to hop, but I also have a fix for the restarting AFJ multiple times with the same connection invitation for mediation.
Awesome. Nice. Really waiting for that one.
Great.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think there is refactoring. Timo suggested in one of the PRs. I haven't done that yet, but we can continue our discussions in the comments on this PR, and I'm happy to evolve our thinking, our code. So, okay. Awesome. I have to jump though.
Yeah. Me too.
Okay. So, cheers.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.
See you. Bye-bye.